Hello, this is Sarah Pruess with Just the Seven of Us, and this is podcast episode number 8, Finding My Religion. I'm joined here with my brother, Tim.
Hello.
Say hi, Tim. This is Tim Skolten from New York, and we're here on Christmas break. Thought we'd do a little more podcasting and touching more in-depth on the LGBT relationship and church theology. And just kind of having a chat about the different, maybe church theologies, East Coast versus Midwest, West, and how we're both personally, where our personal journeys have led us, growing up in the same home of fairly conservative evangelical Christianity. So, Timmy.
Yes.
Here's some questions.
Let's hear it.
I guess, what's your relationship with the church nowadays?
It's not negative, but I feel like it's just been kind of aloof or a little disconnected. I think since I've moved east, things have progressively just kind of fallen off the radar as far as a structured religion have gone. Mm. And I think that's partly because that's just how the East Coast is. It seems much less spiritual and much less religious, but also for me, I just feel like I've been through so many years and years of organized Christian reformed and Christian living. It's all been good, but I haven't really felt like I've connected with anything recently that wants me to keep going with it.
Mm-hmm. So kind of the Reformed view, Neo-Calvinism.
Mm-hmm.
Would you say that, what's been the impact of kind of their stance on LGBT people and your view of church going?
Church in general, I mean, I think when I look at the wider church, and I haven't seen enough movement in a progressive way towards LGBT folks, and I think that would help sway me a lot more back into a church or back into finding a church. But I think since I've been in New York, I've also done fairly good work researching places I could be going. Mm-hmm. And it's really hard to find the right mix of a theology and a worship style that I'm interested in, but also finding like enough of a lively church with enough of a gay community, which has become more and more important to me. Because
mm-hmm.
out east, there's enough churches, especially within the Methodist and Presbyterian kind of worlds. I feel like those are pretty safe bets that even their web pages will have rainbow flags and they'll be, you know, maybe even a gay or lesbian pastor, which is always a good sign. But then you go to the churches and it's just very sparsely attended,
right?
And there's very few people from the LGBT community there. So it's still, you know, I would never go to a church only because they have LGBT people in it, but I feel like I want to at least have some fellow Christians in the church that represent my background and my orientation.
Right. It's about community, and finding community in a church. Right. Setting is hard enough, let alone
mm-hmm.
specifically to LGBT people. And it sounds like on the East Coast, it's a lot more kind of the almost more traditional worship styles, would you say?
Yeah, very much.
Dynamic, like the hipster churches now that are growing.
Yeah, I would agree with that. I think churches in general seem a little drier, and even though some of the pastors I've seen have been really moving and really passionate, I feel like they also, they like to keep things real short and sweet, and they'll push more of a humanitarian agenda, which is great, but it's less connected to kind of how would Christianity be any different knowing what the scripture is saying, versus just like, how should we all behave as humans? So I think there's there's some unique things about, you know, the convictions coming from the pulpit about, like, what the church is trying to say, like, this is how to live. I think it's, out east, it's very safe, and it's very, like, we need to show kindness and peace and equity for everyone. But I feel like it almost is a very watered down version of Christianity, whereas I feel like the bigger churches that I've been to more in the Midwest are, they might be a little more like scripture based and a little more like try to tackle some of the tough issues, but then they're not able to be as progressive on those issues because they're still not hitting a point where they're like liberal or progressive enough to include everyone.
Right.
So it's hard to find that balance in any church. But I think what I respond to most out east is just that it's hard to find a church even with more than like 50 people in it every given week. So it's hard to feel like excited even about a prayer or a song when it's no one's so, there to sing it.
Yeah, like there's something so moving about, you know, 1,000 people singing a praise song versus 10. We found that to be true. Like, we were attending a, you know, in our community, which would have been basically a mega church, like super dynamic, lots of people, very positive. But like their worship style is super forward, but their theology is extremely fundamental. And it's almost this disconnect.
Right.
And we haven't been to our church for almost a year now since they did a series on their stance with LGBT people. And while they took a huge leap in the right direction, and just kind of accepting that there are people out there that are gay and there's not much to be done, it's not something you fix, but basically you can still love them, but there's a choice and they have to choose celibacy or what they call mixed orientation marriages, just trying to make it work with a person of the opposite gender, as long as you're open and you're both in it together.
Open being honest about
honest
it.
Honest about
not
it.
Open like a open marriage.
Yeah, right. Unfortunately they're not pushing that.
That would be a little more progressive.
Yeah, that's super progressive. We're gonna just try a new theory.
It is more biblical.
It is. Like
families had multiple wives. And
yeah, it was very interesting. They did a 4-week series and a 10-week Bible study, which we sat through the whole thing, and while we were proud of them for, having the guts to dive into the issue, and really actually moving from where they were, which was really intolerant in a way. Like, they wouldn't have kicked anyone out, but like, hey, we need to fix this. Like, come to us. We can get you some help. And I think that churches, like anything else, they're always the last to catch up with society. And we've seen that in every major ethical dilemma that our country's faced, and with slavery and things like that. So I think they'll come around. It just takes a long time. So on that respect, you know, it was a good step, but it ended up being so heavy for us. And at first, you know, we're like, we can take it. Everyone's entitled to their own opinions. But in the end, it was too much for us to take, to be told that when push comes to shove, they wanted us, like, if we wanted to divorce each other. Someone posed the question, like, well, what if you have a gay couple and one of them decides that they are living in sin? How is the church going to handle that? And they said, you know, we thought about that, and at the end of the day, you guys weren't really married, so it's not really a divorce, so it's not a sin to leave each other, and we'd actually help you figure that out. And they were using a hypothetical, but they said, hypothetically, what if one of them stayed at home and had a bunch of kids? We would help them find a new home and even financially support them while she could get back on her feet. And it was a very thinly veiled description of my wife and I. And just sitting there hearing that. And just being like, marriage is hard enough that you're in a group where you're not only not really supported, but that would be their ultimate goal for our family.
Right.
Not to mention that they excluded my wife from baptism because you can't. If you're still living in sin, you're not really ready to accept Jesus, and it just took too much out of us.
Yeah.
We ended up leaving, and we're going to take a break. And our sabbatical from church is actually still ongoing. But for us, it's been actually extremely beneficial. Like, I think most people can at some point in their lives benefit from a break.
Mm-hmm.
What it helps my wife and I do is kind of take a step back from, like, oh, we belong to this church, here's what we believe.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I've been a Christian since my teens, but fully 100% in a Calvin Reformed church, like, oh, this is just what you believe. This is the right Reformed Neo-Calvin ideas, like, and obviously most churches believe this, that what we believe is the closest to the truth.
Yeah.
And kind of growing up in that, and like, yeah, this is how you find a church that's the quote right church, the Bible believing church.
Mm-hmm.
The more close to fundamentalist, and I would never have called myself that before, but really, like, mm-hmm. a really literal interpretation of scripture, like, that's how you know it's a good church, and how many Bible verses they quote or scripture they dive into. And
mm-hmm.
I did enjoy the meaty part of, like, oh, this guy's gonna teach me, like, what this passage means. But we were, and then my wife coming from a fairly new Christian background, and I even had the mentality when she first became a Christian to, like, okay, like, almost you want to hand them a rule book of, like, here's what we believe now, and you just have to get to this point.
Right.
And we were able to step back, and we've been doing parallel studies, I guess, not necessarily together
mm-hmm.
on studying what we believe, but coming and reading some amazing people like Rachel Held Evans, Rob Bell, and both coming to kind of the same conclusion of, like, I almost want to call it post-evangelical Christianity,
mm-hmm.
of, like, a much broader view of scripture. And I think the LGBT issue was just the starting point of, like, mm-hmm. okay, I want to look at these passages and, like, realizing there's an entirely different way to read them.
Mm-hmm.
And then going from there, and, like, maybe all of this is getting read differently, and, like, really stepping back and, like, there's a lot of things I don't quite agree with now.
Mm-hmm.
And some pretty major ones. It's not like, well, this issue we can just all agree to disagree, but just, like, patriarchal you know, interpretations of the Bible and the Calvinistic view of, like, total depravity. Like, we are worthless, worthless creatures except for the grace of God, and I can never possibly do anything right except for Him stepping in, basically, and rescuing me from my own stupidity. And I guess it's just been eye-opening, but we're at a crossroads out of, like, what's the next step then?
Mm-hmm.
Like, we tried a couple different churches, and, like, well, maybe we can find a nice affirming church.
Right.
But running into the whole, like, there are several affirming churches in Cheyenne, but, like you said, they're tiny little congregations, fairly. Mm-hmm. It's interesting, the connection between almost the more traditional the churches, liturgical, ritualistic, they're the affirming ones.
Yeah.
And then the big dynamic groups are non-affirming and extremely conservative in their views. But there's almost this mismatch of, like, the overarching, like, who's in charge views, and then who's in the congregation.
Mm-hmm.
Like, those aren't matching.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, these big affirming churches, like, elderly populations and... but yet they're, like, affirming.
Right. Yeah, and you would think that the hip, young churches where they're singing, like, more rocky kind of music, like, those would be the ones that would be in line with, like, today's youth that is overwhelmingly like supportive of LGBT people. So it's just odd that it's the older churches that are small and it's older parishioners that they seem to be okay with saying we welcome everyone. And maybe that's partly why the churches have gotten so small, is because they've splintered off because of those disagreements about things like LGBT. But it's also, it is surprising to me. And I, not to put like any kind of jaded look at those mega churches or anything like that, but I think they, a lot of their power is in kind of when you have such a generic worldview and you're trying to reach people outside of any one denomination, you have to really make everyone happy, you know. And I'm not saying that they don't try to touch on important topics, but I think when everyone steps back just enough, you could come to the same church and say, oh yeah, we totally agree with everything this person's saying, but yet they're not even getting into like the hard topics. And then, you know, a few years into a big church, someone finally, like, you guys question, like, well, are we truly accepted or not? Like, you've been happy to have us walk in and be part of your crowd and given the offering every week, but beyond that, like, can we serve in the ministry? Can we help watch children at nursery? Like, those kind of things are the telltale signs of, like, if the church is ready for you to serve in any capacity, they're probably progressive. But if they're very vocal about wanting everyone to be there, but they're not really even defining that everyone is welcome to serve, like, that's a red flag. So you wonder, like, if any church has gotten so big, and then you go to the service, and it feels right on a lot of levels, but then you're also like, huh, I don't know what they really believe in, like, because it was so generic, and it's like, God is good, and we all love God. At the end of the day, you do want a little bit more of kind of how does this kind of like inform our daily behavior? And if they're not willing to take those steps to even like have those difficult discussions about things that are going on in the real world outside of the church, like they're not as progressive as they sound, even though their music sounds cool and hip.
Right. Yeah, a lot of the issues we brought up to the church, it was like, well, no one's ever really asked us that before. Mm-hmm. We need to figure out what we believe.
Mm-hmm.
And then coming back almost with the more restricted view of like, well, we have to like really draw a line. So like with the baptism thing, it was a little bit like, well, I guess, you know, this is kind of like an obvious, we can't do that in good conscience. And they came back with, well, you know, I guess we never really thought about it, but we're going to make baptism way more restrictive than we have in the past so that we're not just discriminating against gay people. So now we're going to discriminate against more people.
Right.
And us, we're like, that's the last thing we wanted.
Yeah.
We wanted you to look at it like, it's okay because that's the first step to salvation kind of thing. Like, well, it's not necessary, quote, for salvation. It's opening the door for you to have a spiritual connection and for anyone to be gatekeepers. And it just really opened my eyes. I was sharing with you that I've been listening to a podcast called Almost Heretical, and they dive into a lot of power dynamic and power differential questions in the church and how even that kind of thing of like an elder board even or a lead pastor like making decisions as gatekeepers for who's in and who's out is so anti-Christ, really.
Yeah.
Because Christ came to really demolish any power dynamics.
Mm-hmm.
And it's been fascinating to study how the church in its origins was all about the underdog mentality of like, basically if you're the underdog, you're kind of in the right.
Yeah.
Like, you're always trying to fight the powers and fight the machine and the big man and the empire.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the role of the church. It's like, we're here to be the underdogs. We're here to stand up for the people who don't have a voice.
Yeah.
And if you can always be in that position, like, clearly that doesn't automatically mean you're in the right, if you're, right. like, the lone voice in the wilderness, but chances are good.
Mm-hmm.
That is, and about the turn of the 5th century was when the church started linking up with the empire,
mm.
when the Roman Empire became a Christian,
mm.
and then it became a Roman, like, the Roman religion was Christianity, mm-hmm. and ever since then we've held hands with the empire, and the U.S. is a great example of that now, like, mm-hmm. we're enjoying the power, and we feel like, oh, now Christianity's in the power, and we gotta keep it that way, but really, like, that's the wrong side of history,
mm-hmm.
and the LGBT issue is a really good example of that, like, we need to be standing with these people of oppression.
Right.
One of my favorite quotes is, like, if you find your theology, I can't think of the word. If you find your theology, not liberating,
mm-hmm.
What's the word? Oppressing people, sorry.
Right.
If you're oppressing people with your theology, you need to rethink your theology.
Right.
Like, your theology always needs to be in line with liberation.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just, you know, the next frontier of oppression.
Yeah.
And just studying now the fascinating link of evangelical Christianity and slave owner theology,
mm-hmm.
and how powerful that link has been. Mm-hmm. And now looking back, now that we're through that in history, the church has almost come back and be like, oh yeah, we've been on board this whole time.
Yeah.
But the church was one of the biggest leaders in keeping slaves in their place because of the verses
mm-hmm.
in the New Testament about slaves obey your masters and
right.
you'll please God, and like realizing like that's the way to control people of color
mm-hmm.
is to make them feel like that's their role
mm-hmm.
and misinterpreting passages like that.
Right. Yeah, I think for a lot of Christians it's they want to believe that you should always be challenging theology so that more and more people can find God and feel comfortable in that community. But then I think for a lot of those same people, what that means to them is, well, then we have to just water down our faith. Like, we need to accept everyone for the sake of accepting everyone, even if it means that we disagree with half the things they're living for or prioritizing. And that's not a bad thing. I feel like even if we started there and accepted everyone, like, the world would be a much better place. Like,
mm-hmm.
you can figure out the details sometime in your small groups, or like figure out like how you believe on any personal like wedge issue on your own. Like, leave the whole denomination out of that. Like, there's just too many things that people say like is a deal breaker for them, and therefore, like, well, we shouldn't be including those people, or we shouldn't be as loving or affirming
mm-hmm.
for all these groups of people. But, you know, I think that's the danger, is like, I think people have a fear that their own religion or their own faith is going to be meaningless if they just completely open the doors to everyone.
Right.
Like, to have a strong faith in any one thing, you almost need to have a clear sense of who's right and who's wrong. And half the Bible is about what side are you on? Are you on God's side or not? Like,
right.
So it's divisive in its own definition, but it's a really hard sell to say, like, we're going to be a completely open and affirming church for whatever group of people, but also we have our own values and we're going to, you know, stand up for them.
Mm-hmm.
And what you and your wife were dealing with in the church was really, I was torn about it, and it, you know, we had enough conversations about it kind of as you were living it. So I see how a lot of churches need to be challenged from within, and like they need to get to know people that are feeling excluded or people that are feeling like less loved or affirmed by a church to truly know like how they need to correct their ways.
Mm-hmm.
But at the same time, you know, like, at what point do you just say, this isn't
healthy
for our family, and this isn't, right. Okay. You know, we need to send a clear message to that church. Like, if you're not going to welcome every single individual in our family,
right.
then we're not going to worship here. We'll take our time, our energy, and our money elsewhere. You know, I'm not saying all churches are run by money, but
it
factors in. You know, sure. if they see no one walking in the doors, they're probably going to change even their theology a little bit. Right. But I applaud how much you two really tried to walk that very fine line of, you know, we think we can actually be the tipping point for the church, and we think they need this at some level, even if it's not immediately, like we're not going to change their minds overnight, but we've built a personal relationship with them. It's better for us to have the discussion with them about the gay issue than them just like hearing about it on Fox News or
right.
however Christians perceive the gay agenda. So I get that. But I think it's also okay, and it's also healthy for you guys to say, this is too much. Like, we've tried, and we've had a really polite and loving dialogue, and we've offered ourselves, you know, in a lot of ways to help be the vehicle of change. But at the end of the day, like, this isn't what God has in mind for our family.
Yeah.
And that's okay.
I totally agree. Like, there's a point at which, you know, we could enter the dialogue in a fairly objective way and be the change and bring them to where they were. But at some point, our health is more important, and, you know, knowing where the battle ends and mm-hmm. just parting ways.
Right.
And at the end of the day, too, like, for the most part, like, there was definitely, I feel like, a point where, okay, this was too much. It's too harmful for us as a family.
Mm-hmm.
And just because you're able to handle it in a graceful way doesn't necessarily make it okay. Like, it's still microaggression. It's still,
mm-hmm.
in a way, spiritual abuse, if you want to be ugly about it.
Yeah.
Like, if you don't feel 100% welcomed for who you are at any point, it is spiritual abuse of turning the Bible. Like, one of the podcasts I was listening to, they basically at the end were like, why are we making such a big deal of, like, this is one issue where we have to prove you wrong,
mm-hmm.
instead of how can we get to prove you right?
Mm-hmm.
Like, why aren't we going that direction? Like, how can we figure out how to read this Bible to affirm these people, mm-hmm. instead of, you know, there's been a progression of the LGBT issue in church of, like, okay, here's the clobber passages. Or, like,
mm-hmm.
originally it was, like, the Levitical laws. Like, hey, it's very clear,
mm-hmm.
blah, blah, blah. Well, then all of a sudden everyone's like, well, we don't really follow any other Levitical laws.
Mm-hmm.
So that got thrown out. Oh, well, now, but let's go to Paul. Like, mm-hmm. Paul kind of ruled on that. Okay. Well, then the theologians came in and said, yeah, but you're not really reading it culturally, and
mm-hmm.
we cannot make that leap because he was talking about something different. Well, then the next thing that came up was the complementarian view of, like, well, Genesis was about the mandate for men and women. Like,
mm-hmm.
it says, and this is why a man shall leave his family and join with a woman.
Mm-hmm.
And we'll read that as a mandate. Like,
mm-hmm.
so for every argument, we've kind of had to, the church has shifted. Like, we keep trying to find ways, and I say we, but the church.
Right.
How can we still keep excluding these people? Because
yeah.
there's just got to be a way.
Right.
Instead of, you know, way back in the beginning, it should have been like, how can we maybe read this in a different light? Like,
yeah.
read all the verses, put more weight on the verses that do affirm
mm-hmm.
gay people or any people in general.
Right. The unloved and the unwelcomed people.
Right. And there are plenty of, like, the verses in Isaiah 56 of eunuchs being welcomed into mm-hmm. God's arms. And
right. Yeah, not to mention, you know, I feel like in a lot of denominations, you know, maybe this is just a litmus test of kind of how the popular culture has started to see this, and maybe that is a tipping point and that's good, but, you know, it used to be just acting gay is sinful and being gay is sinful. And then a lot of churches have shifted to, you know, love the sinner, hate the sin
right.
approach. So it's kind of like, we still love you, but not everything you do,
right.
or not everything you think you are. And there's still a motive to change who you are. And then a lot of churches might say it's okay to have the feelings that you have towards the same-sex individual, but just don't act on them,
mm-hmm.
and then we'll still accept you. You know, there's always these contingencies on who we are as a community. Like, we're going to define how valuable you are to us and to God and how welcome you are based on if you play by our rules, we'll say you're okay. You're one of the good ones.
Right.
And you're not one of the ones that's just like running rampant, having sex with everyone you can,
right.
that is somehow the fear of people and gay, seeing the gay community, you know, when most of the gay community just wants to have a loving relationship that's consensual, it's respectful, and it's giving and loving,
right.
you know, which is what most straight people want also. So the church tries to put a lot of rules on these things, and again, maybe we're seeing just the general, like, small versions of a shift that, like, in 10 years from now, all churches will say, everyone's welcome, just play by your own rules of how you and God have decided that relationships need to look. Like,
mm-hmm.
let's agree on, we're never going to all agree on what a perfect relationship is or who it needs to be between. Let's just agree, like, you've got to keep redefining your own relationships to be more and more Christ-like. Like,
right.
maybe that's the solution, but churches just need these little baby steps to get there.
Mm-hmm.
But it's really complicated, and obviously they're risking a lot to even take a stand in a little way. You know, every little church group and ushers and elders, they all need to kind of be on board with these small changes. And it's unfortunate that more gay people in those churches don't just simply come out and
right.
say, hey, guess what? We've been a part of this community for years, and I'm not going to change who I am, and I'm just asking that you keep loving me. Like, that's a simple conversation that most churches can probably struggle with for brief periods of time and then get over
right.
and make some really impressive, healthy choices. But instead, I think they've alienated so many of those people feeling that way and feeling like the rejection.
Mm-hmm.
And so then the church is basically okay, just kind of running with it. And those people that are gay or trans or feeling out of sorts with the mainstream, like, they're just kind of ghosting the church and they're just kind of drifting away.
Right.
And nobody's having that real difficult dialogue of saying, like, I'm part of this community too, and I have a right to be here. And there's, you know, 10% or so of us
right.
that we're all wanting to be part of the church from now on, like, we don't even want to have to fight to be here.
Like, right. Well, it's like we were just talking about, like, at some point your personal health comes first.
Mm-hmm.
So these people are leaving, and like you said in the beginning of finding that community, like, so the church is driving away gay people.
Mm-hmm.
And so the ones that do show up are alone. And
yep.
after some point, you're like, there's no community here for me.
Yeah.
And sure, I can have community. It's not like I have to just be with gay people.
Right.
But I was listening to a podcast and talking about statistically, church is one of the most segregated
mm-hmm.
hours of the week.
Yeah.
And, you know, they were talking racially, but it applies to
mm-hmm.
Sexual orientation too.
Yeah.
In this respect of, like, it is very segregated. Like, you are going to be the lone gay Christian.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe if you are, then you're like, I'm here because I do buy into what they're saying a little
right.
bit. So I'm trying to just be good and not have a relationship and
right.
avoid that part of myself.
Yeah.
And so we're segregating it. And they were saying statistically, it's the most segregated part of your week. And most people are okay with that.
Mm-hmm.
So if you quiz someone, they wouldn't be like, oh man, I just never realized that. Like, what do we do to bring in more people of color, more people of mixed, you know, orientation, mm-hmm. what, how do we change this? It's like,
mm-hmm.
well, this is just the best thing because, you know, as far as people of color, like, well, maybe they just have a different style of worship. Like,
yeah, right.
They have their churches. We just, you know, we don't even know if I've done a lot of studies now, like, churches of color, like, do they even have the right theologies? Like, mm. their theologies are kind of out there, liberation mm. theology, like, it's not really that biblical. So it's kind of like, if there is a person of color in our church, like, they're kind of, like, they're joining us to, like, meld with us instead of bringing in their own
mm-hmm.
viewpoint. Like, oh, this person of color gets it.
Yeah.
They get that we're on the right track, so they're coming to us.
Right.
And same thing with sexual orientation. Like,
right.
you know, it's really okay because, like, we just don't agree with gay people's choices. So mm-hmm. it's kind of for the best, and they can go find somewhere that's more affirming or...
Right.
You know, what really was hard for us is the church we were attending, they actually were softer on the stance, but the study they were doing was very thinly veiled idea of love them to change them.
Mm-hmm.
Of like, you know, the secret here, you can't just go up to someone and tell them they're doing the wrong thing.
Yeah.
You have to build that relationship, and then you can tell them.
Right.
Instead of just get to know this person,
mm-hmm.
that should never play a factor, you know?
Right.
But you have to get to that point where you're comfortable enough and that person's going to listen to you.
Yeah.
Which was, frankly, super appalling.
Mm-hmm.
And I think a lot of this, you know, this issue of can you really be a gay Christian is a good example of how... we're really just misreading the Bible altogether.
Mm-hmm.
And then it just opens up a Pandora's box of, like, I get it, because they get into this circular logic of, mm-hmm. like, well, if we say, like, anything goes, then we run into problems here because it doesn't, and we're, someone's got to be telling people how to think, and, like, mm-hmm. there is a right and wrong, and it goes south fast, right? Like, you can't mm-hmm. get out of that little cycle of,
right.
well... but wait, we're supposed to call each other to do the right thing, and so all of a sudden you're still stuck in the same place.
Right.
But in reality, if you find your theology spinning like that, you have to take those steps back and be like, mm. if I can't figure myself out through that, I've gone down the wrong path somewhere.
Mm-hmm.
So walking yourself back,
mm-hmm.
being like, how can I navigate this to not have to spin out in a certain cycle.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I feel like as Christians, it's very important to hold each other accountable, support each other. I think that should always be part of the church, but it also, I don't feel like accountability is one person telling the other person how to live. You know, like accountability should be me coming to you and saying, I've decided I'm going to do this new diet, and I really think it's important for me.
Right.
Can you help me be accountable so that I don't slip up? Because I want to go through, like, full 60 days of this, you
right.
know?
Instead of
But it's not like you coming to me and saying, stop eating that or stop doing this.
Right. That's a great...
Which isn't even effective. But I feel like accountability is not one group of people telling the others how to live, but it's everyone agreeing, like, we can all improve our lives by getting closer to God or getting... closer to each other. And then once someone identifies for themselves, like, I really want to change something,
right,
then people around them would be happy to support them, and that's kind of how it works the best,
right?
But over time, like, the message just got mixed into, you know, the church or the church plus state will decide for everyone, like, what's best for everyone. So mm-hmm. we'll tell you how to live, and by the way, most of you are doing just fine, even though you're sinful in all these other ways that we don't bring up at church.
Right.
But you gays and other people with, like, these really unique sins that only, like, three scripture verses in the Bible will touch, we're going to exclude you altogether.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so it's still, like you said earlier, like, certain individuals and gatekeepers over time have decided, like, exactly what the scripture means.
Right.
And they've had this, like, you know, clear message in their own mind about who's welcome.
Right, and I have more knowledge or divine revelation than you do.
Right.
And just one of my favorite analogies is, like, I think Rachel Held Evans said this, and I'm sure a lot of other people have too, but, like, the story of when Jesus stopped a bunch of Pharisees from stoning a woman who they had caught in adultery, and he was, you know, wrote in the dirt, and then whoever has never sinned can cast the first stone, and one by one, interestingly, the eldest person left first, basically, because the older you are, the more you realize you're not innocent.
Yeah.
But we all listen to that story and then say, well, Jesus then told the woman to go and sin no more.
Right.
And that's really the message. But most Christians identify as Jesus in that story.
Yeah.
And not the Pharisees who dropped the stone.
Right.
And, like, how eye-opening that analogy is of, like, none of us should be identifying as Jesus in that story.
Right.
We should all be identifying as you should be that first person to drop your stone.
Mm-hmm.
And be like, yeah, you're right. But we tend to think of ourselves as, like, no, I've got to be the one to set this person straight.
Yeah.
And that all just plays back into the power differentials and, like, how the hierarchies get to be, instead of, there should be really no leadership, no one having more divine knowledge than anyone else, and really the underlying message of Jesus is, like, your job is to get this person to believe in God and let him take it from there.
Right.
You know,
yep.
Like, we're all on this journey, and
yeah,
sure, someday God might speak to your heart and be like, you know, you really have to change this part of you, but
yeah,
to assume you're the person to tell that other person. And,
right.
And just how far off course we've gotten in evangelical Christianity.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
That's pretty impressive. But
right.
For me, at the end of the day, like, the question is church a safe space for most gay people?
I don't know how to put a number on it, but I'd say no. And I think it's part that the church itself has decided not to be a safe space, and it's part that enough people have been hurt by the church, or assume that they'll be hurt by the church, and they're just staying away. So the dialogue isn't really even happening about, you know, who wants to be at church and who is gay. Like, it's not starting there. It's like, all right, there's this turf of, you know, churches feeling like it'll either divide their church to say all gays are completely welcome, and I'm not just saying half welcome, like, come worship with us,
right,
but don't serve as one of us. But to become a truly affirming church is a very big step and a scary one for any church, I'm sure. But then, again, I think the wider issue is that so many gay people just know that they won't feel completely comfortable at a church because of their childhood or because of what they've seen in the news. And it's just an easy no-brainer. Like, we as Americans, and we as, I think, gay people, I feel a lot of pressure to kind of choose a primary identity. And even though I want very badly for the world to see me as a gay Christian, I feel like it's almost more of a wedge issue that, you know, I'm gay, and if the church isn't ready for me, then I'll worship in my own way, and I'll find something outside of a building of other believers to do that. I don't need the church.
Right.
Whereas I kind of need the gay community.
Right.
In a little more tangible way. So it's not to discount, like, what I get from God, because I feel like I'm separating what God might give me versus what a network of believers would
church is not God.
Right.
And you don't need, it's like baptism, like, it's a good thing, but you don't need it for salvation.
Right.
And church is good because of fellowship.
Right.
And if you're in a place where you can't have that, and it's not a totally safe space, at this point, we're not ready to put ourselves in that position again.
Mm-hmm.
And we don't know where that's going to lead us.
Right.
I'm always open to that, but it's not... There's always a chance for comments and judgments.
Mm-hmm.
No matter how much the church in general is like, hey, just come serve with us or right. worship with us. It's not safe because there's always a chance someone's going to say something or, like, we still don't feel comfortable, like, showing affection or something in a church. Like,
right, right.
Because someone might come up to you. And until then, I guess I'm more on board with that. It opens up a lot of questions of, like, what to do with kids and how do you expose them to your faith without the setting.
Yeah.
But in a way, you know, the question is, though, is it better to have them grow up in that environment and have to have them unlearn things?
Right.
Or be exposed to that and then
right.
potentially damaging them versus not exposing them at all and yeah. risking their non-exposure.
Right.
Which is an interesting topic, but...
Yeah, and I think depending on the family, you know, if the family itself is gonna... Just like watching, say, like, adult-themed movies, you know, if the family decides it's okay for everyone to watch that movie, but then they're going to have, like, some really healthy discussions about it and the themes that the kids are exposed to, then I think even a less progressive church would be okay, you know, whereas if kids are going to church with their parents and the parents disagree with some pretty important pieces of what the church is teaching and there's no real dialogue, like, then the kids either learn that, well, whatever the church is saying isn't really important to their parents because they're not talking about it, or, you know, my parents are just kind of pushovers or whatever. Like, there still needs to be a sense from the parents to the children about, like, this is areas we really disagree with about the church, but we're going to stick to it for this reason.
Mm-hmm.
Or... for these very good reasons, like, we're just not going to go to church for now. Like, we're going to keep it on the back burner.
Right.
And I think all those choices are fine based on the family. But it is a really good question of, like, is it better for children to go to churches to build that community, to build that routine, even though they may know, like, some things really are not congruent with their family and their parents' beliefs.
Mm-hmm.
Or is it better for them just to stay away from a slightly toxic environment
right.
that might not be as toxic for them as it is for their parents, you know, but I think it's...
Or more toxic, like,
yeah.
you know, youth in church is one of the most unsafe spaces you can expose your kid to in a way of, like, any potential abuse issues, if it's theological, spiritual abuse, or physical abuse, or sexual abuse. And even, like, youth pastors in general are, like, the least schooled pastors, you know, and they're, like, guiding youth into that. And so
right.
it's just an interesting thing. But like I said, kind of this issue is just the tip of the iceberg, too, of, like, I guess really in the space of deconstructing a lot of my theology of the Calvinistic viewpoints of, you know, I no longer believe I'm a totally worthless human being of total depravity, and I should really, you know, even a lot of worship songs that we listen to are like, I'm just a wretched being, instead of, like, I'm created in the image of God, and I don't have to wake up every morning being like, I'm so glad you still accept me even though I'm so horrible. Like, I just don't buy into that theology at all. I don't believe it's biblical at all.
Right.
It caused a lot of emotional damage to me, actually, growing up, like, struggling with depression and self-worth, and kind of realizing, like, I have a lot more worth if I've been created in the image of God. And a lot of the New Testament talks about, like, why would you doubt that God's not in you already? And, like, you have that power. Like, I've given you that power. Like, go do something with it instead of, like, every day you just have to thank your lucky stars that I'm here to help you.
Right.
You know, like, hey, get over yourself. Like, you're a new person. You're a new being. Mm-hmm.
Right.
You've been reborn in Christ. Go and change the world.
Mm-hmm.
Instead of, like, you know I'm a pretty good person in a worldview, but at the end of the day, I'm just totally worthless.
Wretched.
Wretched being. And
right.
Who am I for you to even talk to me? And
mm-hmm.
Yeah,
and as a gay person, you know, that's also like the message you get from the non-Christian community, you know, that you're a lesser citizen
mm-hmm.
because you're gay, you know, and I think it compounds it for a lot of people. It's already a trigger when you feel like a second-class citizen. And so for you to walk into any space, whether it's you or your children or whatever, like to feel like you're either there on a loophole or you're there because like someone's arm was twisted enough. Like at the end of the day, like that's not how you want to worship. Like that's right. not a good place for your heart or your soul to be welcomed.
Mm-hmm.
You know, to be like, yeah, I'm not worth it being here alone or by myself. Like this is like not even because of humans fighting for my rights. Like this is like, I'm a terrible person, you
right.
know, but I still get to walk in here and sing these hymns. Like that's not
right.
a very good consolation prize.
Right.
So you still, yeah, like you wish the message of more churches could be simply like, let's start from scratch. Like we're good, honest people that want what's best for us and those people around us. And
mm-hmm.
how can we keep improving our world around us? Like,
right.
don't worry about like your value. Like we're all great. Let's just make the world.
You do
bigger.
Have value because you were created by God. Like
right.
how amazing is that? Like
mm-hmm.
If you were really made in God's image, that's pretty amazing.
Mm-hmm.
And you can go and do something with that. And I'm just totally falling in love with the idea too of like, Christ came to show us how to live,
mm-hmm.
and restorative
mm-hmm.
creation of like our journey is to restore creation,
mm-hmm.
and like I have that potential, but it also starts with me. Like I can potentially live my life to have heaven on earth,
mm-hmm.
and not like, well, I just can't wait to be in heaven and all this horribleness can be behind me. Like if you can get to that level of centeredness and peace
mm-hmm.
with God, that like you're creating your heaven on earth
mm-hmm.
and then that spreads to those around you, like that's the overriding message of
yeah
the Bible.
Right.
So yeah, I mean, as far as our family, like I said, it's a journey and
mm-hmm.
we've talked round and round about it, and I think taking a sabbatical is not a bad thing of like,
mm-hmm.
you know, drilled into us is like, you have to go to church every Sunday.
Mm-hmm.
Even if you miss one, you need to question your choices. And
mm-hmm.
I'm excited really for the journey.
Mm-hmm.
But I think the interesting thing that I've been thinking about lately is the idea of like, if I think the notion that, you know, in the U.S. we have hundreds if not thousands of denominations who
mm-hmm.
all believe what they believe is the closest thing to the right thing. If my job is just to try to find or create, like, well, this is really, like, I've got the answers.
Mm-hmm.
I'm just basically recreating what everyone else has been doing,
mm-hmm.
which is just as bad. Like, oh, no,
right.
we've come to the right conclusion. And just almost, like, the idea I've been thinking about lately is, like, unchurching, like
mm-hmm.
the idea of like, can you set up a space that's the antithesis of church?
Right.
Like there's no one in leadership,
mm-hmm.
like a group of people having community, like the New Testament churches,
mm-hmm.
instead of like, you know, I'm going to start this little church and I think I figured out some of these answers
mm-hmm.
and get people to listen to me.
Right.
Instead of like, can we create a community of fellowship with nobody in charge? There's no power dynamics.
Mm-hmm.
It's Christ-like in the idea of there's no first people
yeah,
and
right.
no one in charge.
Right.
Mm. And if you can reach that level of humanity,
mm-hmm.
then you're on the right track, which
right.
I think is pretty difficult to do because humans want to have leadership.
Yeah.
And power usually wins out.
Right. But yeah.
Anyway.
I agree. It's a tragic note to end on. It is. How difficult that potential heaven on earth would look like.
Right.
But I think it shares, like, how complex this issue is and how we're not just talking about spirituality or just each of our individual relationships with God. This is about us being part of a historical tradition of religion within our region of the world of many, many believers of many different religions. Like, it's obviously hard to unravel that kind of
mm-hmm.
system.
Well, I think we've been taught to believe, like, this is how it's always been.
Yeah.
And that's really not true. The evangelical movement is a fairly new Christian belief system.
Mm-hmm.
And Christianity hasn't always looked like this.
Mm-hmm.
And just kind of diving more into the history of the church. Mm-hmm. And, like, you know, we just assume, like, well, ever since the Reformation or whatever, we really figured things out.
Yeah, right.
And going back and being like, what historically played into that?
Mm-hmm.
And realizing, like, we might not be on the right side of history here.
Right.
With a lot of issues.
Yep.
And just always questioning. And I think the cool thing about the Bible, too, is that it's a book of self-analysis.
Mm-hmm.
Like, rarely in history, people who write history are usually the victors, right? Like,
mm-hmm.
we write history as the victor.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's skewed in that way. And the Bible is unique in that it's a reflection of how we do things wrong.
Mm-hmm.
And if we can always keep that mentality,
mm-hmm.
then you're going to be more on the right track. Mm-hmm. Then you will, like, no, we figured this out. This is how we're going right. to end victoriously, like.
Sure.
Ugh, yeah, we messed all this stuff up, and
yeah,
we're constant self-reflection.
Yeah,
is a very biblical view of things.
Right. Just because time has gone on, doesn't mean everyone's on the right track, right. and you just need to, like, click it over a few notches. Like, it's worth going back to the roots of why this whole religion or worldview started. And trying to bring that into current day thinking.
Right.
Makes sense.
Yeah. Well, we should probably wrap things up.
Okay.
But thanks for this fun talk.
Anytime.
As we start the new year, we're going to dive deeper into the messages of the Bible of standing up for the oppressed and the poor and the widowed and the orphans and the environment and...
Mm.
I talked a couple podcasts ago about kind of doing a personal project of, like, deep diving into specific topics and how I feel like my whole life spiritually, it's like, oh, like, I just focus not just on myself and my personal relationship, and that's really all that matters, but, like, the Bible is way more of a call to action. Like, mm-hmm. am I taking my white privilege,
mm-hmm.
really, and using it to the advantage of those around me. And so I reached this crossroads of, like, yeah, that's what I should be doing, and realizing, like, am I doing that? And so I want to, like, start deep diving into, like, how can I personally start using that
mm-hmm.
and doing the call to action.
Right on.
So thanks for joining us, and we'll talk to you soon.
Bye.
Bye.